The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
And now, Sports Talk 1240.
Hey, we got the second hour here. Sports Talk 1240. The young boys, the young men,
just
took you through the first 60 minutes, and now the cranky old men have you for the last 60 minutes.
That's right.
Live and in living color, my partner, John Sweeney, one of the biggest Jet fans I know. He's got the Jet hard hat on tonight. He's got his David Harris jersey on tonight.
In white.
I failed, in terms of our Jet preview coming up in a little while, I forgot my Al Toon jersey on the couch. That's all right. All right? And in about 10 minutes, we'll have a special guest. It'll be a trio breaking down Jets training camp coming up this week. Joe Caparoso from Turn on the Jets will join us about 10 after 9. And he gives a ton of coverage on Turn on the Jets. And if you're a big Jet fan, you're probably aware of the website. You're aware of the coverage. And we'll have him get you that info so you can follow him all through the summer. So but before we get to Jet football, let's just talk a little bit about my partner's baseball dreams of the postseason with the New York Mets.
The New York Mets.
Looked kind of bleak at the beginning of the weekend with Kershaw shutting them down.
That's
and
right.
The Dodgers taking the first two games. But the last 2 days, the Mets discovered that when you put the wood on the baseball, it travels in the other direction. And you're able to score some runs. And the Mets put up 15 runs last night. And then today, despite Familia blowing a save opportunity.
Also, DeGrom pitched the Jets. It was a great pitching game today.
It was great. DeGrom
and also
versus Greinke.
Greinke and the Jets. I mean, the
and
Mets.
I was right. He wasn't going to break the record.
Right, you
were
saying
last
time.
Pretty easy prediction.
45 and a third innings. And the Mets ended it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
And not only did they end it, but they drew within two games of the Washington Nationals as new acquisition Juan Uribe cracked one off the wall in the bottom of the 10th.
About a foot and a half from a home run.
And the grandy man scored to win it 3-2.
Yeah.
And now the Mets at 51-48, trailed by two games. The New York Yankees have a nice lead in their division as they pounded out some runs today against the Twins and got themselves a win.
The Yankees have been on fire. But one thing I will say, though, I've been hearing a lot of talk, a lot of people calling up, talking about A-Rod, comeback player of the year. You don't have that honor to that award when you got suspended for drugs, my friend, okay? That does not include. So who's ever out there thinking A-Rod's getting comeback player of the year is out of your mind. It's not going to happen.
So you don't like that idea, do you?
No.
You know,
not for a player for suspended for drugs.
You know he turns 40 tomorrow.
Yeah, well, that's
maybe
great.
Maybe giving it to him for that, for his 40th birthday?
He's still not going to the Hall of Fame in my eyes, ever.
Well, he won't because they'll keep all those guys
right.
out.
But
we know that what's going on with the whole PED issue.
Right. It's a
so
ridiculous.
We know he's not in. He did have two hip surgeries. If they've given it to him based on that, then so be it.
No, he was,
there might
he
be
was
someone that's more
year,
deserving of the award.
He was suspended last year for the drugs.
No, he was, but he has had hip surgery.
Right.
Right? And that's a pretty...
But if he, like you said...
It's a pretty big thing coming back from hip surgery. Talk to Bo Jackson.
Like we talked
right?
about Dave
Talk
King.
To Albert Bell. He couldn't come back. He had a more severe injury like Bo Jackson. But listen, he's doing what the Yankees need. He's hitting home runs. Teixeira's pounding them out. They're scoring runs, the Yankees. Getting decent pitching. Good bullpen work. They got a good lead, 5-6 games in that division. But you brought up A-Rod, so let's have a nice Sky King moment,
shall
we? That
was his fifth game.
The other day, A-Rod hit 3 homers in a game.
That was his fifth time doing it.
And that was the fifth time he did it.
And Dave King has done it.
And 7 guys have done it in the history of the game. 7! When did baseball start? The 1880s?
Something like that, yeah.
All right? So 5 of those guys did it during the last 30 years, though. When steroids took over and PEDs and juice balls and pulled in fences and all that. But before 1988, only 2 guys had hit 5 games where they had 3 homers or more. And one was Johnny Mize, and one was David Arthur Kingman.
Kingman. That was before, you're talking about before 88?
Yeah, well, his career was over after 87.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah.
86 was his last full season. He had done it 5 times, once in the American League with the A's, 4 times in the National League. He did it twice with the Cubs, did it once with the Mets. He's the only man to hit three homers in a game for the Mets and against the Mets. So this week, Sweeney, you can celebrate when he did it, because tomorrow is the anniversary of the first of 2 days in which Kingman hit five home runs at Shea Stadium.
Yeah.
July 27th, 1979. He hit two homers against the Mets in a win for the Cubs. And the next day, the 28th, he hit three homers in a game the Mets won, actually. In 2 days, he was 6-for-8, five home runs. That was the essence
incredible,
of Kahn.
Incredible. Incredible. I'm going to look at the...
So forget all these steroid guys and the PEDs. I see you getting upset about A-Rod, no Hall of Fame. Before...
Well, I'm just
that
saying,
all took over.
The comeback when player of the year thing is out.
The all-natural strongman.
Well, of course.
Kingman was one of only two guys.
Kingman, you can hit a wiffle ball out of Wrigley Field when it's windy out there, but Kingman was a great home run hitter.
He has missed.
But he did a strikeout.
He's missed the three-homer in a game right. guy, too.
And you can hit, like I said, me and you can hit a wiffle ball out of Wrigley when it's windy out there. Come on.
Yeah. I don't know if you can hit 600 feet out of Wrigley like Kingman, but
that's right.
You might hit, you may be
but
able to get it over second
that.
Base,
hey, I agree
maybe.
With you. What?
All right. Don't be a wise guy. Kingman's probably the strongest guy to ever swing a bat. He might be the strongest guy. I know everybody loves to talk about Mickey Mantle, Babe right. Ruth, maybe Jimmy Fox, Harmon Killebrew. You know,
yeah.
A lot of guys had tremendous power.
Greenberg.
Richie Allen, right? Any
Greenberg,
of these guys.
Right, yeah.
But listen, most of those names are from
Jackson.
Way back, and we didn't see any of them.
About Jackson.
But in the 70s, yeah, but Reggie Jackson didn't have... The regularity of crushing 500-foot home runs like King.
Now it's unheard of now.
But he was.
John Carlos Stanton, that guy hits these monster home runs. It's like on SportsCenter. Kingman was doing that
and
regularly.
And what's the tape measure on those? Usually 450, 470?
Yeah, Kingman was hitting 500. He had a 600-foot home run. It's insane.
He was amazing.
Incredible.
So you're happy the Mets are in first?
Yeah. Well, they're not in first yet.
Well, I'm getting ahead of myself.
They're two games
they're
away.
They're two games out.
They're playing back.
Could have been first.
I like the trade.
They didn't blow
back.
That last game against the Nationals.
DeGrom pitched a gem yet today.
Yeah.
Greinke, that was what a game that was today. Familia, hey, look, Familia is like you said. If DeGrom's the MVP of the team right now, in my opinion, Familia would be the co-MVP of the team right now of what he's done. So there you go. And look, they don't have this star David Wright's not in there. They went out and got some players, make a couple trades. So there you go.
Were you happy with the Hall of Fame inductions today?
Yes. Yeah.
Local product, Long Island native.
I will say this.
Hall of Fame baseball player, Craig Biggio.
Kings Park kid.
From Kings Park. Went to the same high school as me. I graduated in 87. He graduated in 84, a little older than me. 1984 graduate. Seven-time All-Star.
Well, you are,
four-time Gold Glover. Five-time Silver Slugger.
You were a ninth
slugger.
Grader. He was a senior. Is that what you're telling me?
When I was in ninth, he was a senior.
Did you know him walking the halls? This guy's like, wow.
I did not know him. Ninth grade was in the junior high back then.
Oh, okay. Because I thought maybe he was walking by knocking your books out of your head.
He actually used to come to my hockey games.
He did.
Yeah.
He used to come
his
to
his friend
games.
Played on the team when I was on varsity as a freshman.
Okay. Craig Biggio came to your hockey games.
Yeah, because he used to come see his buddy play. Yeah. His buddy was a senior.
Oh, so you when you went to high school, it was 10th, 11th, 12th.
Right.
So you didn't see him.
Exactly.
So you didn't go to any high school games trying to support your team.
So missed the 3,000 hits.
Great.
And the most doubles of any right-handed hitter in Major League Baseball history. Yeah. Craig Biggio, congratulations. Can we start up that other song since we got our guest on hold? I just want to touch on a few topics before we get to Joe Caparoso from Turn on the Jets.
Great website.
And what better song than The Wings and Paul McCartney singing Jet. Now listen, there's a new sheriff in town and his name is Todd Bowles. So I don't know about you, Johnny. You may have remembered Lou Holtz, or I don't know if you saw Eubank, but I only saw 10 coaches run this franchise.
I loved Todd Bowles last year as a
he ran a great defense in Arizona.
And we talked about this before he was even hired. I said, let's go out and get this guy. Right. He's a no-nonsense.
The
players love him.
Walt Michaels was the first coach that I remember as a Jet. The whole sack exchange, the whole mud bowl.
Yeah.
Walt Michaels, I liked him. Then Joe Walton took over. Right, took over a high-powered offense with Kenny O'Brien, Al Toon, Wesley Walker, Mickey Shula, Freeman McNeil. Right?
Right.
And part of the sack exchange still remained. And that team, although they made the playoffs, they underachieved. Why? Because they didn't replace Michaels with a top-notch head coach. So I'd say Joe Walton, I wasn't too happy with him. Next up was Bruce Kozlik. Big offensive mind from Cincinnati. I don't know.
I didn't like him.
I didn't like the way he handled the exit of Ken O'Brien.
No.
He brought in his boy Boomer Esiason, who failed here miserably in 1993 and 94.
And like I said before.
And sooner or later, he wound up costing his coach's job, did he not?
Yeah.
Then Pete Carroll came in for a year. And Pete Carroll probably should have gotten at least another year or so. But we all know that the spike ball game with Dan Marino cost him his job after 1 year. I did like Pete Carroll, and I love the defense he ran under Coslet. And boy, did he come through later in coaching life.
Oh, yeah.
Great in college with USC and all their cheating ways, right?
All the
Reggie Bush's family a house. But in Seattle, he wins a Super Bowl. So he gets an incomplete as a head coach for Pete Carroll. Then Rich Kotite came in. He was just a pure victim. Couldn't build on what he did in Philadelphia. And with the Jets, I didn't really view him as having much to work with. And he couldn't even field a real competitive team. So would they win? 4 games in 2 years? So he gets an F. I kind of like to block that out of my mind. Parcells after him? 3 years?
I thought we were going.
Best movie ever made, getting us Curtis Martin?
I thought we were going.
Went to the championship game. We're up 10-0, 3 minutes into the third quarter.
I thought we were going.
And then the fumbles.
Fumbles.
The fumbles and more fumbles. And Terrell Davis cost us a trip to the Super Bowl and a win over Atlanta. And then, after Testaverde got hurt to start the 99 season, and they came back to finish 8-8.
I'll never forget
Parcells that. Chose not to finish the job that he came here for and coach a 4th season because there was a new owner who happens to still be there named Woody. He gets out, gives his buddy Al Groh the job, and Groh does a one and done.
That's right.
1 year, blows a playoff chance at the end of the season, and goes off to college down in Virginia. Never to be heard from again.
Never to be heard from
not
again.
Not by
exactly.
me. Then Herm Edwards came in. And
not
thanks
bad.
To Chad Pennington, he made the playoffs a few times with the Jets. And he did okay. But not good enough. Not in Pittsburgh when you're
the problem
right
with
there
Herm
going
was
to the championship
clock,
game and he's
clock
taking a knee.
Was horrible.
Yeah. Oh, let's and they, not listen.
Yeah, I'm
not
just saying,
it.
That was the problem with Herm. I liked Herm.
We need a he clock management coach. I know all about it. All right? But a failed playoff attempt against Pittsburgh. And then the next season getting blown out. In 2005, he was fired. And Mangini came in. And then after Mangini failed and left, it was Rex Ryan, who had 6 years here. None better than his first 2 years as Jet head coach. One of the best defenses in the league the first 2 years. Back-to-back trips to the championship game. And you thought this franchise was going to build something real good. But, John, 4 straight years. You know, 2011, they blew a shot at the playoffs at the end. They catapulted the Giants to their Super Bowl victory with that Christmas Eve loss.
Christmas Eve gift.
But the last 3 years have been abysmal. And I like Rex Ryan. I hope he does well for himself. But he more than deserved to get fired for no other reason than this, John. And we can shut the music off now, bro. We're okay with that. And I want to welcome Joe Caparoso in. Joe, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, Joe. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
All right. So I gave you the summary of all the coaches I watched over the years. I've been watching this team for 40-plus years now. And I finished up with Rex Ryan real quickly here with him and Mangini. I was trying to tie it into the music. But to me, the bottom line with Rex Ryan is I think he survived off of his defensive genius in the first 2 years. But I did a little research as to why I was disgusted with this team, Joe. And there's a lot of different reasons. But from a defensive standpoint, in terms of points allowed, because I know sometimes we get a little distracted with the yardage per game average and all that allowed defensively. But the Jets have allowed 360 or more points to opposing teams 4 straight years. 4 straight years. Joe, you know when the last time they did that?
That's a good trivia one right there.
And I wouldn't have known it either if I didn't look at it to try and figure out why I was disgusted with him in the end. It was the first 4 years of the franchise back in the 60s when they were the Titans.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So I really don't care what they finished in yards per game. The last 4 years, the Jets have given up more than 360 points each season. And it basically got worse each year. Last year, they gave up 401 points.
Yeah, the total defense stat with the yards could be a little misleading. I think the Jets' defense really did gradually descend every year. Even if you look at something like their DVOA, they dropped every year. They were in the mid-20s last season. I always think the defense once you started getting into 2011 and 2012, maybe the last few years, was living off a little more of this you know, the Rex Ryan reputation and was not regularly getting stops in big spots and, you know, was going out and having games where they were allowing, you know, 30, 40 points. And I think the defense very quietly was not very good the past few years, and hopefully that will change with all the other changes that we saw this offseason.
All right, so before we talk about the training camp roster and what's going to go into it, let's start by having you address this whole free agency thing, because I've never seen it happen where a team brought in so many, and I think the Jets brought in whatever the number was, I'm sure you know, with 9, 10, 11 guys. Why don't we talk about the free agency class that came in, because it was much bigger than the draft class, so why don't we talk about that to start the show here?
Yeah, I mean, in recent memory, 2008 was a very active offseason for them. That was the year that, you know, they got Favre, they signed Damian Woody, they signed Alan Faneca, they signed Tony Richardson. That, compared to this offseason, reminds me of it a little bit. It was as active as we've seen this team in free agency and in the trade market, just adding to their roster. So, really, their first big move wasn't a free agency move. It was trading for Brandon Marshall, getting them probably the most talented overall receiver they've had here since probably Keyshawn Johnson, to be honest, way back, you know, in the late 90s. And then in free agency, very aggressively going after their weaknesses, particularly the cornerback position, adding basically three starters, Terrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, and Buster Screen, who will start in the slot, which is basically a full-time role in Todd Bowles' defense, and then continuing to add to that secondary by getting Marcus Gilchrist to pair with Calvin Pryor at safety. And then really from there, they just built out depth. They added a lot of veterans to build up that depth chart. We know that's been a weak spot for the Jets, where if one person gets hurt, they don't really have anybody to step in. There was no veterans with experience behind the starters. So you go get Aaron Henderson, Joe Mays, and Jamari Lattimore to, you know, fill out the defensive depth chart of linebacker. You get Stephen Bowen and Kevin Bickerson to add to the defensive line rotation and still bring back the Jake Usable to keep that rotation that deep. Offensively, they added James Carpenter, started one of the guard spots. You know, the other spot is still up in the air, but he'll be a new starter for them offensively. They worked to bring Bilal Powell back, you know, instead of, you know, losing him up north to Rex. We know there was some interest there.
Right.
And the same thing with David Harris. They were able to keep him in-house. You know, it was definitely a sensitive spot for the organization after what happened with Terrell Revis. They were not going to lose another homegrown talent to a divisional team. So they took care of their own. They added depth, particularly on defense, at cornerback and linebacker, and really reshaped this roster. And it's as deep as we've seen the roster probably since, you know, 2010 or 2008.
I mean, looking at it on paper right now, the Jets would be in the top five defensive teams in the NFL right now, I would say, right?
They should be. I mean, they have the horses on defense to have that kind of unit. Obviously, are led by a guy who did very impressive work last year on a defense, on a unit that was slaughtered with injuries and suspensions and all other kind of obstacles that they had to overcome, and they were still a very good defense that carried that team that was down to, you know, fourth quarterback to a playoff appearance. And, you know, that was a reason Todd Bowles won the AP Assistant Coach of the Year. He's got 2 years working behind Bruce Arians, who was the Coach of the Year and has been one of the best coaches in the NFL since he's taken that job. So you should feel optimistic about this defense, because now, you know, we know the Jets had that great secondary with Rex back in 2010.
Right.
But at that time, they didn't have the defensive line talent that they have right now. Now they could combine those two things to have Wilkerson, Leonard Williams, Damian Harrison, and then Sheldon Richardson after week four up front to pair with Terrell Revis, Antonio Cromartie, Buster Screen. And you hope Calvin Pryor and Marcus Gilchrist could solidify that back end at safety.
Just hearing that, it gets me excited.
A lot of talent.
And they got to look good. And, like, you know, we don't want to touch – I mean, if you want to touch on the draft, that Leonard Williams, to me, was a steal getting him at number six. I mean, I think the Jets had a fantastic draft, too.
Yeah, I mean, the value is impossible to argue with. I think Williams was most people's top player in this draft.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a surprise that he was there at six. And, yes, there's understandable concern, well, where, you know, where is this guy going to play? Is he going to play with Richardson and Williams on the – Wilkerson on the roster, and then – lo and behold, Richardson suspended for four games, so Williams will be starting right out of the gate. And even when Richardson comes back, he allows them to set up a three-man rotation to do different four-man looks and, you know, keep everybody fresh and productive into December.
Yeah, Joe, my optimism is very guarded just from what I've seen going on year after year. I truly believe in looking at what this team's worth, and you said it already, but this defensive line – it must be dominant. Forget Cromartie and forget Revis. this defensive line has to they have to get in there and kick ass. I got to be honest with you. If they're not dominant on the defensive line, there's going to be problems, and it kind of flows from the draft, where you're looking at Mo Wilkerson getting drafted and Richardson and now this kid Williams. All right, but even guys that are off the edge like a Quentin Coples, most of these the edge rushes and these D-line, that's what they've invested in. And they have to be dominant. Like, I see this stuff with this sack exchange 2.0 and all that. I mean, I view it as people getting ahead of themselves just a little too quickly. I mean, like last year, I believe combined, Richardson and Wilkerson only had like 14, 15 sacks, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, Wilkerson missed the final, you know, four or so games last year. Richardson, I think, finished with 8.5.
Right.
It was a career offer. Now, Wilkerson was at 10.5 the year before that, and I think in the contract year that he's coming up towards, Wilkerson and Richardson are both guys that should be hovering around double-digit sacks. Obviously, Richardson's projections are going to change with missing games, and you also hope that the pressure that they're putting on offensive lines in the interior is going to make life easier on the edges for Quentin Coples, Lorenzo Molden, who they drafted in the third round, a guy like Jason Babin, if he sticks around, Calvin Pace is still here. They're not overloaded with talent, proven talent on the edges, pass rushers. But you hope that the interior pass rush is going to maybe help a guy like Quentin Coples finally get over the hump, get 8-9 sacks. You know, he's been a kind of a 5-sack guy, or maybe it's a guy like Molden as a third round pick comes in and is able to grab 5-6 sacks. You hope that they sort of have that ripple effect down to the linebackers.
Well, they have to. I mean, this is how the original New York Sack Exchange in the early 80s, that's the effect they had for their linebackers and their D-backs. So, you know, Wilkerson and Richardson. Now, you said, you know, Wilkerson missed four games last year. And I understand he's a very good defensive lineman. But what are your feelings? I kind of think he's a little out of line in terms of his contract request in terms of putting himself up there with a guy like J.J. Watt. I mean, that to me, that points more towards being a disruption the way Revis used to be when he first got signed and held out. How do you look at that in covering this team?
Yeah, I mean, he's not going to get J.J. Watt money. He's not that type of player. J.J. Watt is in a class of his own, arguably the best player in the NFL. Wilkerson, I think you look at some of the other contracts that recently got signed. You know, Hayward, is he going to get paid as much as Quinn? I'm not sure. A lot of these guys drafted in 2011 kind of, they're in a difficult spot because the Jets can just pick up the fifth-year option, and they have his rights this year. He has to play. He's not going to not play. And then Jets can just franchise him if they want next year. They really don't have to do anything with any immediacy. It's understandable he wants to get paid. You know, he was a late first-round pick. He was a second-team All-Pro. He's been a good, very good player, basically, since being drafted. It seems at this point, you know, he showed up for mandatory May camp. He hasn't really said anything publicly inflammatory. I don't expect any real fireworks to go on at training camp. I think he'll be there. I don't think he's going to be complaining to the press every day.
Right.
He should be motivated to perform in a contract here. And it'll be interesting to see if what happens with Richardson's suspension gives him any more leverage. I still think that if the Jets are creative, they can find a way to pay both of those guys long-term. You know, it might end up costing them a guy like Damian Harrison, but their contract situation and their cap situation is a little more fluid. And I think some people are making it out to be. They have a lot of short-term contracts, and the cap is rising. So it's an interesting situation to see how it plays out. I think they're still working on something with Wilkerson. I don't know how close they are to getting something done.
Yep.
It would be nice to – you want to take care of your homegrown talent. You want to, you know, you want to pay a guy that you drafted in the first round and has done everything right on and off the field to this point. It's just, when can they find that, you know, happy medium of going back and forth?
All right, and don't get me wrong, I love the depth on this defensive line, and I want to see Wilkerson demand a great contract through his performance. And you talked about the other co-star here because he was rookie of the year, you know, a few years ago, but Sheldon Richardson. Here's where my enthusiasm got dampened, okay? You know, you got a new head coach coming in, Todd Bowles. He's done a great job in Arizona. He's got a great defensive mind. I don't have to be there in a coaching room with him. I know you break down a lot of film on your own and put it on your website, Turn on the Jets. But I know this guy's looking at his roster, and he's looking at that D-line, and he's like, here is the heart and soul of what I'm going to build in terms of a dominant defense right here. And here's a guy who knows the laws of his sport in terms of his contract, and he disregards it and gets himself suspended. And I don't have to worry about other guys on other teams getting suspended. I'm a Jet fan. So for me, looking at Todd Bowles coming in, I'm aggravated with Richardson for being so selfish and just careless in his actions. Talk about him a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely a frustrating thing. I think you know what you sign up for when you're an NFL player. It's clearly laid out. He's now one strike away from facing a one-year suspension, which is going to hurt him in any contract negotiations and hurt him long-term, and it's not the right first step to get off, you know, with on a new regime. He's a young guy still. He's year three. He's a 23, 24-year-old kid. Dumb mistake, and he's paying the price for it, and it's going to hurt the team through the first 4 weeks of the year. Richardson was great last year. He was deservedly the rookie of the year in 2013 and yep. only got better last year, and he, long-term, really has more talent and projects to being probably a better long-term player than Wilkerson, so he's very, very good. It's just the Jets are going to miss him the first 4 weeks of the year. Now, they're lucky that they did draft Williams. They do have other depth, veteran defensive linemen who could step in. And getting Richardson back and, you know, fresh from week five will be a nice boost. But they just don't have an easy first four games to start the season. It's not, you know, it's never easy to say what games are easy or hard or what the
right.
best stretch of the schedule is. That being said, you know, you're playing Indianapolis in week two, a Super Bowl favorite for a lot of people on the road. You're playing Philadelphia, always going to be a tough offense to deal with. And then, you know, having Miami in week four, flying all the way to London won't be easy either. So, the Jets, definitely games you'd like to have Sheldon Richardson for, but now they're going to have to find a way to boom without him.
So you got Wilkerson, you got Sheldon Richardson. You got Leonard Williams. You got Snacks Harrison. Duzable's a pretty good utility guy getting in there on the D-line.
Right, yeah.
Who do you see them? I know this is just looking way too because camp's just starting, but you cover this team inside now. Do you look for them when it comes down to crunch, and we're just analyzing this D-line in terms of cutting guys? I just look ahead and say, well, I'm going to be more likely to want to cut an older guy than a lot of this young blood that I'm seeing form this nice depth that I'm looking at here on the roster. How do you look at that, analyzing things?
Well, I think after Duzable, I think he'll definitely make the roster. I think they'll probably keep a guy like T.J. Barnes to be the backup nose tackle. He's played a little bit over the last couple of years. They want to groom whoever Harrison's replacement is going to be long-term because he's going to be a tough guy to pay. And then I don't think both Stephen Bowen and Kevin Vickerson will stick. I think maybe you take one of the two veterans just as you have a guy who's been there. And when you have the young guy backing up in T.J. Barnes, you know, you're young with Williams, Richardson, and Wilkerson, and then you have a veteran to maybe help you hold the fort down until Richardson comes back in week four, and then you might maybe drop that veteran off the roster at that point.
All right. And with the linebackers here, you know, Harris is coming back for his 10th year.
Yeah.
And Davis, I like Demario Davis. I'm looking for him to excel in his development and become like that Mo Lewis type from back in the 90s. Outside of those two guys, and obviously Quentin Coples and Pace is returning. I mean, he's another guy, 34, 35 years old. You see any surprises? I know they brought in Aaron Henderson, a few other guys. You see any surprises there?
Yeah, they have a really interesting group. They have a lot of depth, particularly at inside linebacker. The guy they signed from Green Bay, Jamari Lattimore, probably more of a special teamer. Guy who's very good on, you know, different punt coverage units. Aaron Henderson's a guy who was over 100 tackles a couple of years ago at Minnesota, was one of the better starting inside linebackers in the league. Obviously, he's had some off-the-field issues. If he can keep his head on straight, provides really good depth and a guy who started a lot of games. They also added Joe Mays, a guy who started a little bit for the Chiefs last year and, you know, has played a lot
right. And
kind of bounced around the league. It'll be interesting to see how many backups they actually keep it inside linebacker and outside linebacker. Coples will be sort of in that one-edge spot. You figure Case will, you know, continue to do what he normally does, particularly against the run. And then you hope the third-round pick, Lorenzo Molden, could do something. Maybe one of the guys they drafted in the later rounds last year, Trevor Riley or IK, MK Polly, you know, comes in as a situational pass rusher. They also have Jason Babin off the edge. You can't keep all these guys, and that's why a guy like Babin might end up getting bumped off the roster if they want to keep one of the younger pass rushers instead and hope that, you know, they break out behind that defensive line.
All right, now, I know now with the defensive backs, they got a lot of holes in their draft from guys, you know, like all those guys from 2009 are gone, you know, whether it's Dustin Keller or Sanchez, and now finally Kyle Wilson's been let go. But there's a lot of names there. We know Revis is back in town. Cromartie's back. I'm hoping he doesn't go back to taking a lot of holding and interference penalty calls like he was before he left. But run down a few of the guys that you like. I know Dexter McDougal's coming back off that injury, but run down a few of the guys you like on top of the obvious names.
Yeah, they have really nice depth this year. And what's good, after you get past the top three guys that will start, Revis, Cromartie, and Screen, Milner and McDougal, guys who were counted on to be starters and major contributors last year, who are now both coming back from injury, don't have to rush back from those injuries, and there's not a ton of pressure on them. They can come back, get healthy, learn behind professionals, guys who have been all pros in the NFL, be situational players, and hopefully be developed into being long-term assets or long-term starters here. You also have a guy like Marcus Williams, who played pretty well for them as an undrafted free agent last year. He's in the mix, provides some depth as a guy who's playing. And then even Darren Walls, who slots in as maybe their seventh or eighth corner this year, started, you know, 10, 11 games for them last year. So the fact that he's all the way in the back of the depth chart now, that's probably a better spot to have them, but at least he has some experience. Safety's a little bit more of a question mark. Calvin Pryor should be used more to his strengths this year, which should help him perform, hopefully, up to his first-round billing. Gilchrist, you know, was up and down in San Diego.
Right.
Better than some of the other guys that they had back there last year. You hope that Antonio Allen could get his head back on straight if he's just focusing on playing safety instead of corner and provide some good depth behind Pryor and Gilchrist. And then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot. You know, does Jaquan Jarrett stick on the roster as a fourth guy? Do they go with a younger guy like Rontez Miles? But really, it should be Pryor and Gilchrist who are getting the bulk of the reps back there.
The defense, is this where you think the weakest part is the safeties out here right now with these guys?
Probably, yeah. I mean, Gilchrist was pretty inconsistent in San Diego last year, and Pryor still has to prove it, right? I mean, theoretically, he has talent. He was a first-round pick for a reason, but they're not anywhere near as proven or stable at safety as they are at corner.
Joe, I know that there's got to be a lot of personal pressure on Dee Milner coming out the same year as Richardson, but to me personally, with this defensive backfield, I know what I'm getting with Revis. I know what I'm getting with Cromartie. I think Pryor needs to be that big hitter. I think for the Jets, it's been a long time since they've had a real heat-seeking monster hitter like Ronnie Lott style, just floating around back there and flying up. I've seen some footage when he got drafted that you had put on your site. So I think he's the big X factor coming in. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think I look at three guys who are kind of key X factors in the Jets defense this year. If they're going to just be good or they're going to be great top three unit in the league. Calvin Pryor, guy who was a first-round pick, didn't do much last year. You hope in Todd Bowles' system, he's in the box, he's coming after the quarterback, he's that intimidator over the middle and a difference maker who's helping force turnovers. Quinton Coples, who we talked about a little bit before, can he finally become 8, 9, 10 sack guy coming off the edge?
Yep.
And DeMario Davis, who you also mentioned, a guy who's been good. He's been a competent starter and inside linebacker. Can he take that next step and be a guy who is forcing more turnovers and getting more sacks and really becomes an above-average, you know, top-of-the-line inside linebacker in the NFL? So if those three guys can take the next step and really play to their potential in this defense, then you add that to the mix with what you're already getting with Revis, Cromartie, Richardson, Wilkerson, what you should get from Leonard Williams. Then you're talking about a defense that might be the best in the NFL.
Yeah, and you're right about Davis and Pryor. Listen, this team has struggled and been an embarrassment in terms of forcing turnovers. So that's why I focus on that a little more.
Pryor had a concussion last year, and I think that his injury like held him out. That's why
it might have, but as a fan, that's disappointing.
I thought he was going to be flying around. What they call him, the Louisville Slugger or something, coming out of college or something like that.
Yeah.
We thought he was going to be like. And then he get that concussion.
We were hoping. We were calling him the
and
Hawk.
We were like what? Yeah, the Hawk.
We gave him a nickname after a former boxer, Aaron Pryor.
Yeah. So we got the Hawk going to be knocking people out, and then he had a concussion last year in the beginning of the year, and he really didn't go up to his expectations. Like, hopefully this year, this is the year.
Yeah. All right, Joe, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and break down the offense with you. You stay with us?
Sounds good.
Very good. All right, folks, we'll be back after this message.
Turn on the Jets, ladies and gentlemen.
Sports Radio New York and AM 1240 WGBB are proud to announce the new Sports Talk 1240, along with the launch of a brand new website at sportstalk1240.com. Check out our new site for information about upcoming shows, as well as easy access to past shows, articles, our live studio webcam, and more. Of course, be sure to tune in to Sports Talk 1240 every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. on AM 1240 WGBB, or visit sportstalk1240.com for ways to listen to the live broadcast online or from your iPhone. We're excited about these new changes and hope you will be too.
Sports Talk 1240.
So you're looking for a great club but don't want to go into Manhattan. Or you'd like to find a new restaurant to check out. Or you're buying a house here on Long Island and you'd like to find out about a certain area. Wouldn't it be nice if you could find out all the information in just one spot? Well, you can. LongIslandExchange.com. It's all you need to find out all about Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com for hotspots, classifieds, news, and more. LongIslandExchange.com is designed with only the Long Islander in mind. Get the best of Long Island. LongIslandExchange.com. Discover Long Island all over again at LongIslandExchange.com.
If you're trying to quit smoking, dipping, or chewing tobacco, you don't have to do it alone. Nicotine Anonymous is a 12-step program of recovery that meets regularly in your area. There are no dues or fees. The only requirement for membership is a desire to be free of nicotine. For information and meetings near you, call 877-TRY-NIC-A. That's 877-TRY-NICA. Or visit nicotine-anonymous.org. Let us share our experience, strength, and hope with you.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240. Check us out every Sunday night at 8 p.m. right here on AM 1240 WGBB. And visit us online at sportstalk1240.com.
Making simple changes in your everyday travel choices makes a big difference to New York's air quality. Trip change. Use mass transit, rideshare, bike, or walk. Visit cleanairny.org to learn more. Clean Air New York. Breathe it in. A public service message brought to you by the New York State Department of Transportation.
And now, back to Sports Talk 1240.
All right, folks, we're back. Sports Talk 1240. Phone number 888-8811. Although I'm sure we ain't taking any calls because we have a special guest tonight for your 60 minutes of Jet football training camp preview. Before we get back and break down the offense, Joe, why don't you give people the info to follow you at your website, Turn on the Jets?
It's turnonthejets.com. It can be followed on Twitter at Turn on the Jets. And this daily coverage and analysis of the Jets, obviously picking up now as training camp kicks off, a lot of film breakdowns, and just general opinion and discussion about the team. So definitely make sure you check out the site at turnonthejets.com and give me a follow over on Twitter at Turn on the Jets.
And Joe, I just want to tell you, I check it out every day, numerous times a day. You guys have all the information of the Jets. It's exciting. It's well informed. You do a great job.
Great,
I just want to tell you that.
Thank you. I much appreciate it.
And as much as I am excited about the Jets this year and their defense, I'm going to go into I want to switch it over to the offense right now and go to a position that I'm not too happy about right now, and that's the quarterback position. If you give us a little information on that. I know Fitzpatrick, Geno, and my boy, which I think is going to take over soon, maybe by week 3 or 4, Bryce Petty, and I think he could take this team on his back and carry him. But just give us a rundown on what your opinion is on the quarterbacks.
So, I mean, the Jets really didn't have a lot of options or a lot of flexibility to address this position this offseason. When you look at veterans who actually switched teams, hard to say that Fitzpatrick wasn't the best veteran to actually switch teams this offseason compared to guys like Josh McCown and Brian Hoyer and Matt Castle. That's kind of the competition for the other people who've left who switched teams. There wasn't any major veterans who ended up leaving. I think a lot of that stuff about Rivers and Breeze being on the trading block was way overstated. And they had the 6th pick in the draft, you know, Winston and Mariota were gone. And there was really no other prospects who merited first, second, or even really third round consideration. You know, they ended up taking Petty in the 4th round. I think he was the 4th or 5th quarterback taken overall. It was a pretty weak, not very deep quarterback class. If you weren't in those top 2 spots, then they bring back Geno Smith, who, for the 2nd year in a row, very inconsistent, finished the year on a higher note, will now get a little more talent to work with at the receiver position, hopefully a boost on the offensive line from James Carpenter, and will also hopefully improve thanks to the switch from Marty Morningway to Chan Gailey. You know, Geno's accountable for his own mistakes. That being said, Marty Morningway was infuriating to watch at times last year some of the decisions they made with the play calling. And Gailey, theoretically on paper, should run a system that is a little more conducive to Geno Smith. Runs a lot of similar concepts to what he did at West Virginia. And what was interesting is that when Geno was coming out and Gailey was still the head coach of Buffalo, there was a lot of rumblings that, you know, that would be a great fit. That would be a perfect fit, you know, for him offensively. And then obviously it didn't end up working out that way. And yet here they are again. And from what we're hearing and what we're going to see, it will be Smith's job, like, unless he completely bombs out in the preseason,
right,
which is unlikely because he played well last preseason with a lot less talent.
Yeah.
It was when the actual bullets started flying that he did not start playing as well. And I think the Jets, the way the schedule breaks, he's going to start those first four games, and they have a bye week, and I think they're going to evaluate where they are and how he played, and if they think they need to make the move, I don't think there'll be a hesitancy to have a quicker hook and, you know, giving the veteran, you know, Fitzpatrick a chance to take over at that point. And I think their hope is to develop Petty long-term, a guy who has the size, has the arm strength, but has a tough transition coming over from Baylor's system. And I think their hope is that he can learn for a year or two behind a veteran like Fitzpatrick who knows this offense really well, and then hopefully long-term develop into something. In the short term, I think they like some of the initial things that they saw from Geno, and they're going to hope that with Daly, with Brandon Marshall, with Devin Smith, with Eric Decker, you know, coming back alongside those guys, Smith will play well enough and allow them to be competitive on a week-to-week basis.
Now, Joe, as a Jet fan,
yeah,
forget the precision in your analysis. As a Jet fan, if we want this team to play well and get off to a good start, should we be rooting for Geno Smith to have taken a big leap in progression and just be that quarterback that this team was hoping they drafted? Or should we settle on thinking, all right, we want to run the ball and we want a guy to manage games well, like, you know, the Ivy League boy, Ryan Fitzpatrick? He's had an okay NFL existence, but nothing special. So, or should we, because I personally, and I told my partner, so now he's on board with me, Bryce Petty was great at Baylor. Now, I know the difference, you change in offense, all that. But is there a slight possibility that, like, when Seattle signed Matt Flynn from Green Bay, and then all of a sudden he wasn't the starter because Russell Wilson came in and took the world by storm? That wasn't what their plans were. Is there any hope of hoping for something like that? So what do you think is the best option as a Jet fan?
I mean, I think the situation that you're dealing with is that Geno Smith is going to be the starting quarterback week one. So you want to root for, you know, that starting quarterback to play well. And I think Smith, from a raw tool and talent perspective, probably has the most talent still of any quarterback on the roster. I mean, Smith put up the big gaudy numbers in college, similar, you know, to Petty did in the spread system, was a second-round pick, you know, for a reason. Petty was a fourth-round, you know, pick for a reason. They both, you know, have talent, but, you know, in terms of raw tools and ultimately most talent, that's probably why the Jets are going to be going with Smith early in the year. Their hope is that, you know, we know what Fitzpatrick can do. Chan Gailey knows, he knows the offense. He knows what his ceiling is. He knows what his limitations are. He doesn't need to give him X number of training camp reps. He knows that if Fitzpatrick gets to play, he's going to be ready to play. So his thought is probably, I see Geno has some talent. You know, here's this kid who was a second-round pick. He's only in his third year. He's flashed at times. Let me see if I can max out that talent in our system. And if not, now we have another development quarterback. Well, you know, we hand the reins over to Fitzpatrick long-term.
Right.
And then short term, and then we have Petty, and instead of worrying about developing Geno, we can shift that focus to Petty. But in the immediate future, I think the hope is that you hope that Geno Smith builds on the last four games from last year.
Okay.
You hope he fits well in Chan Gailey's system, and you hope he starts out the season well, and this team starts, you know, 2-2, 3-1, and then they enter a softer part of their schedule. And if Smith goes out and is pretty good this year, plays like he did the last four or five games last season, or like he was the last four games of 2013.
Yeah.
Jets are going to be a 9-7, 10-6.
Yeah, I mean that's why. That's why I don't get excited by the end of seasons when they're already done. But I'm kind of hoping along the lines of what you're talking about that he made a big leap in progress, utilized his offseason properly, and with the influx of the weapons that you're going to speak about, I'm hoping that that leads to a better performance for him.
You know, it is Geno has one good, like one decent game, and then he'll go off for three games or something like that. Or he'll have one great drive, and he'll be like, oh, look at this guy. Look at the talent this guy has. Mm-hmm. And then the next three or four drives after that, the guy looks like he's like one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And he's on my team.
He's young. He's
driving me crazy
so far. I know.
Yeah, I mean, the consistency has not been there yet at all. And it's fair to be skeptical. I mean, he's got to show it. Right? He hasn't done it yet, and we'll be on a quick hook this year. This regime, you know, didn't draft him. He's not their guy. They have a veteran that they traded for and brought in for a specific reason.
And Fitzpatrick's a safe pick. But, you know, I'll honestly tell you the truth, just to get back to Geno, that's why he went into the second round, because a lot of teams passed him. I didn't want him. I was like, forget about
it. I thought he should have went later in the draft, to be honest with you.
Me too.
That was me.
But anyway, let's touch on the wide receiver, because now look at us. We got Brandon Marshall, Eric Decker, Devin Smith, he was very good in Ohio State. He was a top wide receiver coming out of the draft, and we still got Curley. The this receiving core right here has to get you excited. Even though there are some rumors of Brandon Marshall now got his sister's, I don't know if you heard this or not, he's apparently at his sister's wedding in Jamaica, and he notified the team, I think, that where he is, possibly players could get suspended for the marijuana that's
Yeah, did you hear anything about this show? This is something that they just popped up on Yahoo Sports.
Did you hear about this?
I did. I saw some of the tweets last night. It doesn't seem to be something that should result in any kind of legal action for the NFL. It's one of those, I don't know, it's one of those stories to keep an eye on, but I don't think it should turn into being anything. I certainly hope it doesn't, obviously.
Right, yeah.
We finally have the pieces in place to have a very good group of receivers.
Yeah. Right.
It's been a long time the Jets have had this much talent at the receiver position. Multiple guys who are capable of going over 1,000 yards and have done it multiple times in their career. And then Devin Smith, a guy to be really excited about. Short term is situational deep threat, and long term is a guy who can end up being one of the best receivers in this entire draft class. He is just electrifying on the deep ball, and the Jets have not had that in a long time. He's just a playmaker, flat out playmaker, a guy who can get down the field and make things happen. So it will be exciting that he's, doesn't even need to be rushed into being played. You have Marshall and Decker and Curley, who should benefit a lot from having talented guys like Marshall and Decker on the outside of them. So it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, pending, stable quarterback play, the Jets have no shortage of options to throw to this year.
But in reality, these guys, these other young guys are really fighting for one spot, basically, right?
Yeah. I mean, we know the top four in the roster are going to be Marshall, Decker, Curley, Smith. After that, do they keep five or six? Do they maybe keep seven? Probably not. So that's a lot of competition going on there. You have Shaq Evans and Quincy Enunwa from last year's draft class will be battling for it. You have TJ Graham and Chris Owosu, veterans who brought over last year. They have so many guys back in the roster. You have Walter Powell still on the roster, was here last year. It's also going to be who could distinguish themselves on special teams as a returner, because if you're the fifth or sixth receiver, you got to do more than just players.
Teams and all that.
Let me ask you, you think Devin Smith's going to do any return work? Because I know he's a flat-out speed burner.
I don't think so. At least he didn't do any of it in college. He was actually more known as a gunner in college, like a gunner on the punt team. Did he just fly on the field and either down the punt or make a tackle, whatever? He did not return kicks in college, so it would be surprising to see him do it as a rookie. I think the kick returning job is wide open right now. Punt returner, the default answer is Curley. We know he can catch the ball. He's not electrifying as a returner. Those positions are wide open, and I think they're going to factor in a lot to who that fifth and sixth receiver ultimately ends up being.
And then now we could touch on the offensive line. It's solid like it has been. Is there any new accusations you could tell us about?
I mean, you got Ferguson and Mangold and Cologne. Talk about these guys, Giacomini and those guys.
The line could be a little concerning because they were okay last year, not great. Mangold's terrific. He's one of the best centers in the NFL. Ferguson at left tackle has been on a bit of a decline, certainly not the player that he was 4 or 5 years ago, and still kind of being paid as a premier tackle in the NFL, which he may not really be at this point.
Right.
Fine, he's still a competent starter. They'll bring back Giacomini to be the right tackle. Okay in year one, definitely not great, at best an average starter. And then the two guard spots, they signed James Carpenter from Seattle, former first-round pick, a guy who...
He's
consistent in Seattle. There's a reason they didn't pick up this fifth-year option, but we'll be an upgrade for them on the interior. We'll definitely start at the one guard spot. The other spot's wide open. They have Willie Colon. They have Ode Ibushi, who started the bulk of last season.
Right.
They have Brian Winters. They drafted Charles Harrison in the fifth round. That spot is completely wide open. They have even more guys than those four battling for that spot. So I think the hope is that Carpenter really thrives here and brings a big boost to the interior. Giacomini and Ferguson, stabilize on the outside, then whoever wins this guard spot, whether it's, Bushi or Brian Winters, or even if Cologne ends up holding on to it, they end up, not really dragging down the rest of the unit. But still some question marks there.
So as opposed to wide receiver, where there might really only be one, maybe two spots for guys to really compete for, on the offensive line, listening to you, it sounds like you think that there could be the most legitimate competition on the offensive line, not only for starting spots, but obviously all the reserve spots, because you want depth.
Yeah, there's a lot of names. Again, once you get past those four guys who are going to start, it It's Jarvis Harrison who was taken in the fifth round this year. It's Dakota Dozier who was taken in the fourth round last year. You have Obusanya winners, both recent draft picks. You have Colon, who's a veteran.
Yep.
They signed James Brewer from the Giants, guy who can play guard and tackle. They picked up Charles Johnson from the Saints, guy who can play guard and tackle. And they also have Wesley Johnson, who they picked up off waivers last year, was a Steelers fifth-round pick. So a lot of guys in the mix. I should also mention Brent Qualley, who was an undrafted free agent, has been on their roster for 2 years, and actually took the majority of the starting guard reps opposite of Carpenter in OTAs. It could just be a guy who this new regime likes for whatever reason. It might come out of nowhere to seriously compete for one of the starting guard spots.
Right. Now, along with this offensive line, these tight ends, Jason Morrow, I'm going to say it now, and I want you to give, after you talk about the tight ends, I want you to give three X factors like you did with Davis and Pryor and Copels. I think Jason Morrow might be a big-time X factor, but talk about him and the depth on the tight end spot there.
Tight ends should be interesting to watch. I mean, the way they're used in this offense, they're going to be less of a traditional tight end, more of a wide receiver or a slot receiver, kind of flexed out and moving around a lot, which does play more to Jason Morrow's skill set. I think he's going to play a lot more than he did last year, and that even while a guy like Jeff Cumberland is still by default the quote-unquote starting Y tight end, which basically means the inline tight end, the guy who, you know, is doing more blocking. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much that role is going to be emphasized here, so he should see playing time.
Okay.
And they also signed a couple of, you know, veteran blocking tight ends, like Steve Mineri and Kellen Davis. One of those two are likely to stick. He's literally just pure blocking tight ends who, you know, play in running situations and play a handful of plays a game, while Jason Morrow should be a more featured part of the passing game.
That looks good. Jason Morrow looks good. I like him. I like that.
So give us three X factors on offense that you like, you know, that really can make a difference. Because this team's bottom of the league.
Well, I wanted to ask him one thing about the running backs, though. They got Zach
Stacy.
Oh,
Stacey. I apologize. Guy, talk on the running backs.
You got Ridley coming over from New England, right? Zach Stacy that was with the Rams is over here now. And I guess Ivory's – could you give us –
Ivory, because he's proven himself to me. I thought with the injuries, that trade and everything, but Sean Green's career came to an end. This guy, he is a powerful runner. So speak about Ivory.
But, John, let me just ask you, what happened to Chris Johnson? What happened to Johnson last year? He's supposed to be – this guy had 1,000 yards every year. He comes here to us. What happened with him last year?
It did not come together well for the Jets. He just never really got going. I think he struggled working in a committee with Chris Ivory. I think he ran a little tentatively early in the season. And never really got in a rhythm and never brought them anything in the passing game, which I think is something that they wanted. And what's interesting is that, yes, they signed Steven Ridley and they traded for Zach Stacy, which is, again, great to have so much depth and two guys who have been productive elsewhere when healthy, particularly when it comes to Ridley. I still think the top two backs in this roster are going to be incumbents. I think Chris Ivory will still probably have the most overall carries and lead the team in rushing yards.
Right.
Probably the most talented pure runner on the team. And this new regime likes Bilal Powell a lot. They think he was underutilized by the coaching staff last year. They think he was a better player than Chris Johnson and should have been playing more so than him last year. Not a flashy guy, but the best receiving back on the roster, the best in pass protection on the roster, which is an underrated, very important thing, especially when you have a skittish quarterback like Geno Smith or an average guy in there like Ryan Fitzpatrick. Powell's going to be the third down back. He's going to play, you know, more of those passing situations. So he'll have a pretty big role, and then it's going to be, if Ridley is healthy, you know, can he start wrestling away carries from Ivory? You know, same goes for Stacy. But when it's all said and done, I think Ivory leads the team to carries and rushing yards, and Powell leads all running backs and receptions.
Right, so another spot where there's really not a lot of openings to fight for. I mean, these guys are there.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if they carried all four of those running backs, and I don't know how much use the fullback is going to really have in this offense, so they might just carry the four halfbacks.
Yeah, on paper, they're all looking good, all four of them. Right. So there you go.
All right. So now you can give us your X factors offense, because this is a team, bottom of the league. I mean, what, 29th, 30th?
Yeah.
Horrible offense, 3 years in a row. Give the X factors that really need to step up for this unit.
The easy answer would be quarterback for Geno. But if you leave a quarterback on the equation,
right.
I think Brandon Marshall, because this team was terrible in the red zone last year, and Marshall, so big, so physical, one of the best red zone receivers in the NFL. Having him should help them improve in the red zone and, you know, really give them that 1,000, 1,100-yard receiver, which they haven't had since 2007.
That'd be huge.
Jason Morrow on the inside playing to his physical ability. He did not play, played 33% of the offensive snaps last year. Still had, you know, 35 catches and a couple of touchdowns. Can he make that jump to 50 catches and 5 or 6 touchdowns? And then Chris Ivory, you know, as the lead runner, he's been able to stay healthy since he came here. There was a lot of questions or concerns about his durability or his ability to, you know, even contribute in the pass game. Found a way to catch 18 passes last year, which was more than he ever had anywhere else at any other point. Can he be, you know, at 900, at 1,000 yards, and be consistent for them week to week?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I was very skeptical of that trade. He proved me wrong in terms of durability, and I'm happy with the way he runs the ball. I don't think we need to talk about the team MVP, Nick Folk. He's a folk hero, and we won't even bother with that. So the last question is for you, Joe. And I know you do agree that Nick Folk is the MVP of this team, by the way. So
he was the hero last year.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's every year with him.
Listen, he was a hero, that kick against the Colts in the playoffs. That alone, I'll always love the guy. So the head coach, we love him. You like Todd Bowles, correct?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, so... All right, the bigger question is, and maybe I'm not fair about this, I understand the moves they need to make, but like I said, I've never seen this happen. What is your impressions, and I'm sure you follow more closely, M squared, Mike Maccagnan, you like this guy as a GM?
Yeah, it's certainly hard to complain so far, right?
Right.
I think they were active in addressing all of their needs in free agency and trade market, and I think when it came to draft weekend, they were moving up and down the board. They acquired a couple veterans by trading for Stacy and Devere Posey. They got great value with Leonard Williams. They got great value with Devin Smith. And you hope some of these late-round guys to flourish. So far, hard to complain.
All right, Joe, listen, I was going to play a Rick James song for Sheldon Richardson tonight called Mary Jane because of his love affair with marijuana. However, this is the only song that we came up with where the words jet are in it. And we picked this one out for you. It's Paul McCartney in the Wing. So I want to thank you for spending the bulk of the show with us. I want to thank you for the Jet Insight. Give them the website one more time to check out info every day for their Jet coverage.
We're on thejets.com, on Twitter, at SermonJets. And again, thanks guys for having me. Great talking, Jets.
I appreciate it, Joe, and we'll talk to you along the way. Thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot, Joe. Let's go Jets. Here we go.
All right, folks, that's the show for tonight. Jets training camp starts this week. The Mets battle for a playoff spot. The Yankees are in first, and the Ranger season, still a couple months
ahead. Right.
Views expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.